Newsmakers on the Federal Drive.
Stuart Bowen is Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction. As the State Department employees begin to head to Iraq, what's their first order of business when they take over?
The most important piece that they are inheriting from the Department of Defense is the security piece, the police development program. For stability to be sustained in Iraq, rule of law has to succeed, and a crucial piece of the rule of law program is a good police force.
Hear the entire interview online.
Using the Total Gym is that I can get great results, not a lot.
Find news about federal information assurance and new information from various agency CISOs and CIOs on the Federal Security Spotlight on federalnewsradio.com, sponsored by Cisco.
I can design whatever program I feel like to really work on that specific area of my body.
The leg exercises you can do on this particular equipment are amazing because when you do it, you really feel it in your thighs, in your bum, in your hamstrings.
Total Gym is its simplicity. I like the fact that you can stretch with the equipment as well as build muscle tone, quick twitch fiber, which works very well for me. It's applicable to the movements I usually do or the movements I would apply in my martial arts.
Well, here's my five favorite exercises that I always include in my routine when I work out on my Total Gym. I like to start with this one because I get to stretch.
Show. I'm going to follow the money as per usual and be talking first about the plight of a number of federal retirees. If you got your federal annuity check in January, you will notice that it was light by anywhere from $10 to $50. And there is a reason for that. Whether you'll think it's a good reason is something else again. But we're going to be talking with David Snell of the National Active and Retired Federal Employees, and he's going to give us a rundown on why this happened, what you can do about it, and if you should do anything about it. Also, he's going to be talking to us about the National Active and Retired Federal Employees is having a legislative conference in town, and yesterday and today were literally days to swarm Capitol Hill. Grassroots members of NARF from all around the country were here to check out that thing and see what's happening, let their members of Congress know what's going on with Congress, what they want out of this. And then we're coming up, we're going to be talking with the two Steves at the Federal Times, Steve Watkins, who is editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, who is a senior writer for them. And we're going to be talking about the hearings that are coming up this afternoon, which are going to check out. And the debate is, are federal workers paid too much? Obviously, their feelings run high on this. The Heritage Foundation on one side says that the various studies it's done have shown that federal workers are overpaid any way you look at it. They are paid more than their private sector counterparts. They are paid more than people in the same cities. They are paid, again, according to Heritage Foundation, more than people in the same occupations. So we're going to be dealing with that and find out what the two Steves think about that. Do we have David Snell on the line? Oh, David, are you with us? Sorry, I'm having headphone problems here. David, are you with us? Okay, we're trying to get David Snell. He is with the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Legislative Operation, and he's going to be talking to us about the situation of federal retirees found themselves in with their January, February, and now their March checks, and they found them to be $10 to $50 light. And David, are you with us? Okay, no, we haven't got him. All right, I'm sorry. Well, anyhow, to recap, once we talk to David, a lot of things happening today with the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association. They are in town for a legislative meeting. The treasurer of NARF died on Monday. So there's going to be a new treasurer for the organization. And then we're very sorry to hear that. Very popular fellow in the Washington area. And then we're going to switch over to the Federal Times people. And Steve Watkins and Steve Losey. Steve Watkins is the editor of the Federal Times. And Steve Losey is the senior writer for them. And we're going to be talking about, you know, what's happening in the federal world today, the fact that federal employees really feel like they're under attack. And in fact, that was the subject of my column today is the fact that a lot of federal workers are passing for somebody else. They are telling people on airlines that that they don't work for the government, but they're doing anything to avoid it, to avoid this. David, are you there? Okay, we're still trying to get David Snell on the line. Yeah, I got an email from Thelma, and she said, "I enjoyed your column this morning. I agree with you that government workers need to hide their identity in the public." Said, "I do not tell people I work for the IRS. I do say I work for a branch of the government. I don't say which government." And again, we're hearing this from all over the place. Linda, who works for the IRS, she said, "I had to laugh at your article, civil servant or telemarketer. My friends and I face the same situation. We travel quite a bit, and one time when I was asked where I worked, I answered the IRS. I was plagued with questions and complaints, at which point I politely excused myself and didn't return. My friends and I learned a great lesson. We tell people we work for Nabisco. Nobody complains about cookies." And that's Linda from the IRS. And here's one from Dave in Social Security, and he says, "I enjoyed your column about federal workers pretending to be on another line, in another line of work. I learned long ago not to tell strangers off duty that I work for Social Security. Often they would complain or demand that I fix their problem on the spot, even though I'm a tech type. For years now, I have adopted an alter occupation. I am a nuclear physicist working on atomic medicine. So far, nobody has asked me to expound, or explain. They just go away." And that's Social Security Dave. So this is some of the things federal workers are doing, some of the survival techniques they have adopted to in order to not be berated by citizens who are angry at the government. And, you know, this is a very serious situation. I make light of it, but we had the Internal Revenue Service employee who was killed a year ago when a private plane stolen by a deranged person crashed the airplane into an IRS office in Austin, Texas. We had the federal agents that were shot a couple of weeks ago, and being a government worker is always high-risk work, particularly in this age of terrorism, both domestic and foreign. And this is a time when being a federal worker, it's not a laughing matter. We have heightened security at buildings. There are incidents almost weekly in the federal buildings. We had the shootings at Fort Hood. Of course, the tragedy at Oklahoma City years ago, which it still haunts all of us. And this is it's not something to make light of, although we're trying to have a little fun with it. But the fact is that federal workers are very, very anxious right now. They seem to be under attack from segments of the media, from members of Congress who are either hostile to the government, hostile to federal programs, maybe a political thing, and they may genuinely feel that federal workers are overpaid and underworked. And also, I think, many people, and we were talking about this earlier with Amy Morris and Tom Timmon on their show, a lot of people seem to equate working for the federal government with working for the private, with the state and local governments. And so we don't know how this is going to play out, but one of the goals, I guess, of the hearings this afternoon in the House is that we will discover what members of Congress think, what the Heritage Foundation, which is a conservative bent, what they have to say, what their numbers show as to the pay of federal workers, and then also going to be countered by John Berry, the director of the Office of Personnel Management, who is himself a longtime federal worker. He's going to be talking about it along with the National Treasury Employees Union. Might be interesting here to note that in the past, the director of OPM, it's a political appointment, and some of them have been pro-federal worker. Some of them have very much been anti-federal worker. John Berry is about as pro as you could get and about as knowledgeable as you could get. He grew up in the Washington area. He worked for the Representative Steny Hoyer, Democrat from Maryland, for many, many years when he was majority leader of the House. And as a result, he was the point man for the Washington area delegation, which, along with Frank Wolf and Jim Moran and later Jerry Connolly and Isaac Leggett, all of these people, they helped form a coalition that kept the government workers' causes and tasks. We need to take a short break here on WFED. We'll be right back. I don't even know that we're on.
I have to maintain my core. Otherwise, I'll fall back or I'll lean forward. So I get to keep my body straight, which strengthens the core. Okay, we're going to combine two exercises here. One for the back and then one for the tries. Just combine them together.
At AFEI headquarters near the Courthouse Metro, and you'll be out by 9 a.m. Moderated by me, John Gilroy. For more details, go to AFEI.org and click on events.
If you're like most people, you have many financial questions, like, can I afford to retire? How do I protect my nest egg? Will I outlive my money? Hi, I'm Mark Tabron. We'll tackle these questions and more every Saturday morning at 10:30. Learn how to protect and grow your money with me, Mark Tabron, on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Can't wait until Saturday? Call Tabron & Associates Financial Services at 301-773-3923.
And now, here's the virtualization expert, brought to you by VMware and Carahsoft.
This is Aileen Black, Vice President of VMware Federal. Federal agencies want to transform physically distributed server, storage, and networking resources into secure, elastic, self-healing resource pools to deliver IT as a service. This is cloud computing, and its foundation is virtualization. When storage, networking, and servers are woven together on a virtualization platform, federal agencies can begin an evolutionary, not a revolutionary, journey to cloud computing. By utilizing existing IT resources, agencies can build a private cloud and reap dramatic benefits without dramatic disruptions. More than 190,000 customers are virtualizing mission-critical IT resources with VMware today. If you are interested in cloud computing, shouldn't you join them?
VMware's IT as a service solutions are based on their award-winning virtualization technology that's the foundation of cloud computing. To learn more, download Gartner's Magic Quadrant on server consolidation at thevirtualizationexpert.com.
Here's Rear Admiral Robert Day, CIO U.S. Coast Guard, DHS, on the Federal Executive Forum at the DHS CIO Roundtable Live from the 2011 FCA Homeland Security Conference.
The services that we deliver across not only all of the components, but us to each of our individual organizations really makes a difference out there on the front. And we have to understand that every single day, that what we do is now mission critical.
To listen to the whole program made possible by Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com.
Join AFSEA for critical issues in C4I, May 24th through 25th at George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. Together with the George Mason University C4I Center for Excellence, AFSEA brings you the experts in cloud computing, network security, and military use of commercial IT. Exhibit and sponsorship opportunities are available. Register and collaborate with your colleagues today at www.afsea.org, keyword GMU.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award. Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
Mike Causey, welcome back to your turn. Sorry, earlier we had some technical glitches here, including earphones that weren't working. But I think we have David Snell from the National Active and Retired Federal Employees with us now. David, are you there?
I am. Okay. Good morning to you.
Okay, sorry we had these technical glitches. But David, many of your constituents, fellow retirees, got a jolt when they got their annuity payments in January, February, and now for March, and that is the checks were, from what I'm hearing, anywhere from $10 to $50 less each month than they had received in 2010. What happened there?
Well, we're still getting calls on that also, Mike. Let me give a little background on this. Back in 2009, the Congress passed and the President signed the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, and that was signed into law on February 17th, 2009. This is also known as the stimulus bill. Part of that bill, a provision of it, was called Making Work Pay Credit, and what it did was it lowered by about 6.2% tax on earned income up to a total credit of $400 for individuals and $800 for joint filers. Well, that was for working employees, and retirees weren't really mentioned in the bill. But to make that adjustment in withholding from employees' paychecks, the IRS adjusted the pay withholding tables, tax withholding tables, and sent them to both employers for employees as well as to OPM for the retirees. So retirees got, in 2010, saw a little bit more in their monthly annuity payment. And believe me, we heard about it. Anything like that that retirees who scan their statements very closely, any retirees who get those, they start asking questions, and we got the calls. So we checked with OPM, and this was in 2010, and OPM confirmed that these are the tables that the IRS provided them and that the withholding was correct. So life goes on, and here it is, 2011, and that provision, Making Work Pay Tax Credit, expired at the end of 2010. Therefore, the withholding tables were readjusted back to what they were in 2009, and as a result, retirees began to, or did see, more federal income tax being withheld from their monthly annuities, as well as all workers.
And part of that, too, as I said, it was because Congress acted so late. It was, wasn't until like December 16th that they acted on this?
Yeah, that's correct. Of course, the tax year begins January 1st, so any payments received in the tax year are subject to the New Year's withholding table. So, you know, under normal conditions, those additions, that change in the tax withholding would have shown in the retirees' January 2nd payments. However, because Congress did not pass the law that extended the Bush tax cuts until late into, you know, about middle of December, the IRS couldn't get those new tax withholding tables to the employers and to OPM until after the cutoff for that January 2nd payment. So the additional withholding affected for the first payment, their February 1 payment, and it will stay there for the rest of this year.
Now, there are two things to that, too, David. In addition to the withholding, you have the higher health insurance premiums for some people. But NARF has found a solution, right? I mean, there's something people can do if they want to. Is there a number they can call or a URL they can dial up on their computers?
Well, absolutely. The Office of Personnel Management was also flooded with phone calls from retirees regarding the change in their February payment. And in order to be more helpful, the Office of Personnel Management created a new telephone line, a tax hotline, if you will, that retirees can use to call up and make changes to their withholding, their federal income tax withholding. Now, we advise retirees that they should probably also, before they make a change, decide on what they want, to use the absolutely free tax calculator that OPM has available on its website. It's very simple to use. Basically, you put in the the monthly gross amount of your retirement. You put in whether you're married or single and how many exemptions you claim. You hit a button and boom, there it is. This is the amount that you should have withheld every month to meet your tax obligation at the end of the year. Now, keeping in mind this is only for your annuity income and does not take into account what your total tax liability may be if you have other income or if you've got other exclusions or tax write-offs. But it's a good, simple way to figure out what you need to withhold each month from your federal retirement. And then you just call OPM at their 1-800 number. Let's see, their tax hotline is 1-800-307-8295. Or you can go on to OPM Services Online and as a retiree and put your personal identification number that OPM provides all retirees. And using that number in your retirement claim number, you can make the adjustment yourself right online.
Right. And, you know, you made a good point, too, earlier. But people are anxious to recover that money, that 10 to 50 bucks, that differential in their checks. But you need to check your tax status because you might be leaping literally out of the frying pan into the fire. You might find out at the end of the year that you did not withhold enough. And in addition to the retirement annuity, which this calculation is based on, also a lot of federal workers are taking either a voluntary or mandatory payments from the Thrift Savings Plan. If you're 70 and a half, I think you have to start taking them. And so they would have an additional stream of income from that, possibly from Social Security as well. So a tax person told me, he said, tell the retirees, don't fixate on this dollar amount that is down from their checks this time around because they have other obligations. And also bear in mind that some of this too may be as a result of the higher health insurance premiums in a number of the plans. So,
well, yeah,
I know people are serious about this. A next door neighbor came over to my house at 10 o'clock at night, and she obviously did not read the column, but she knew what I did, and she wanted to know what happened. She said she needed every penny of her check, and I think hers was light by about $40 a month.
Right, and retirees especially are looking at their statements, looking at their retirement income with, you know, eagle eyes. They 2 years now they haven't received an adjustment in their gross annuities because there has been no cost of living allowance issued.
Yeah.
Health benefit premiums continue to go up.
Okay, real quickly, because they're giving me the signal here, what's the outlook for a COLA in 2012?
It looks to me like the way things are going, we may get a small one at this point. But
very good. Well, thank you, David Snell from National Active and Retired Federal Employees. And sorry for that earlier glitch, but we got the computers working and the headphones fixed. And we'll be right here on WFED 1500 AM talking with Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you.
Brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
Federal IT policymakers say the days of agency employees having one cell phone for work and another for personal use could soon be a thing of the past. They're exploring the idea of letting federal workers use their personal devices to do their jobs rather than segregating their work lives onto separate devices. The idea, according to federal CIO Vivek Kundra, is that many employees are already using newer, better technology in their personal lives than the equipment their agency issues them. Under the idea, workers would get a stipend to help pay for technology that they buy on their own, and Kundra says federal CIOs can overcome the security challenges. He says as IT needs continue to become a bigger and bigger part of agencies' missions, keeping up with the latest technology will rack up unsustainable costs.
General Dynamics Information Technology, delivering the strength of technology to achieve mission success. General Dynamics IT. Visit GDIT.com to learn more.
For over 40 years, Mantech employees have been solving complex problems for the national security community. Whether they're providing secure satellite communications to the Department of Defense or investigating threats in cyberspace for intelligence agencies, their work is distinguished by high ethical standards and a deep commitment to their customers' success. They've created a culture that encourages individuals to bring innovative ideas and technology to those charged with protecting the homeland. Due to the high demand for Mantech skills and expertise, they have tremendous career opportunities for cleared, highly skilled IT professionals, security experts, intelligence analysts, engineers, and technicians. In 2010, Mantech was selected for Fortune Magazine's 100 Fastest Growing Companies list, named a top 10 best employer for veterans by Military Times Edge Magazine, and for the fourth year in a row, was selected as a top 10 military-friendly employer by GI Jobs Magazine. Apply for openings today at mantech.com/careers. That's mantech.com/careers. Mantech is an equal opportunity employer.
Hello, my federal friends. It's the Geico Gecko, and I've got good news for you. I might even say it's some of the best news ever. Okay, well, definitely in the top three. The big news. Geico now offers discounts for most federal employees GS7 or above, which is no doubt a lot of you out there. So you could be saving hundreds of dollars on your car insurance, all with a company that began over 70 years ago with the sole purpose of serving government employees like yourself. Yeah, that's right. Geico, the government employees insurance company. And today, well, we're the third largest car insurance company in the nation. And did you know about Geico's 97% customer satisfaction rate? Well, saving money tends to make people rather happy, I think. So congrats again to those federal employees GS7 or above. Welcome to the Savings Club. Mike?
Got it. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. The Gecko's right. Discounts are available for most federal employees GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local Geico office to see how much you could save.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Ticked off. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Sleeping with a pet may be comforting, but it may also put people at risk for getting a disease. Veterinarian Heather Bear Brake of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says the U.S. risk is generally low, but
the most common risks to pet owners who sleep with their pets include flea and tick bites, ringworm, and skin infections due to mites.
If the pet has those infections, the risk may be higher. The risk is lower if the pet has regular veterinary care, including yearly checkups, vaccination, deworming, and prevention of fleas and ticks. Dr. Bear Brake says young children and people with a weakened immune system should not sleep with pets. Those people find it harder to fight off infections. A study on pets, people, and sleeping is in CDC's journal Emerging Infectious Diseases. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
Mike Causey, welcome back to Your Turn. Glad to have you with us. And remember, we're here every Wednesday at 10 a.m., and our shows are archived on our homepage. So if you don't get a chance to hear all of it, or if you want to hear it again, or we hope maybe pass it along to a friend, you can get that anytime. So just check the Your Turn section and listen live, and there you go. Coming up now, we're going to be talking with Steve Watkins. He is editor of the Federal Times, and Steve Losey, the senior writer for the Federal Times. Gentlemen, you with us?
Sure am. Nice
hey,
to be with you.
Thank you for standing by. You missed the technical glitches this morning, so you drew a pass on that.
Okay.
Hey, listen, we've got so much stuff going on here. The continuing resolution hangs above us. Most agencies don't have budgets. We have these really unusual, I would say, hearings coming up this afternoon. What's that all about?
Yeah, and we have one other thing, actually. Mm-hmm. Mike, we've got some news to break on your show.
Excellent.
I thought you'd appreciate that. We just wrapped up an editorial board with the Postmaster General, Patrick Donahue.
Uh-huh.
And we are going to be reporting on our website in a little while a story that the Postal Service, not good news for some, certainly, but on March 25th, they plan to announce a a downsizing that will affect 7,500 positions. Some are currently unoccupied, but they include administrators, frontline supervisors and managers, and postmasters. And there will certainly be some risks associated with that. We couldn't get further into the details. I think they're still working those out. But that's what they plan to announce in just a couple of weeks, like I say, on the 25th. And overall for the year, the Postal Service's goal is to essentially draw down 30,000 employees overall. And I think a lot of that is going to be through new rounds of early retirements. Certainly attrition is going to be a big part of that, and possibly a buyout. He said that that's something that they are weighing.
That is a big deal. Thanks for sharing it with us here. Yeah, the Postal Service has been in trouble, and they blamed it all or much of it on the fact that they have to prepay for these for the retirement and for the health insurance premiums. But in fact, it's the new technology is beating the Postal Service all over the head, isn't it?
Well, yeah, they've done an awful lot with technology, and Pat Donahue was explaining a lot of what they've been doing. You know, it takes human hands off of much of the mail sorting. I was pretty surprised to learn. I think he said 95%, Steve, if I recollect that.
Sounds about right.
Of addresses are all read through optics and scanners, and it's sorted automatically.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thanks. That you remember, folks, you heard it here first. The Federal Times breaking the story. They talked with the Postmaster General, and there's going to be an immediate downsizing of 7,500 people. They're going to announce it March 25th, and it will be administrative types, frontline supervisors, and postmasters, with another, a total of 30,000 to come the rest of the year, and certainly offering early outs and possibly offering buyouts, which is always of interest to people. So if you want to pass that along to a friend, tell them to be sure and click on the Federal Times website. They're going to have it posted soon, and they can listen again here anytime. So that's big news, gents. Thank you for that. Now, the hearing coming up this afternoon, I don't recall anything quite like this. It's almost like it reminds me of the Scopes monkey trial in some ways. They're going to debate and decide whether federal workers are paid too much.
Yeah, you know, I've been covering this issue for several years, and I've never seen a hearing like this before, really. It's really kind of the culmination of the last year or so in which we've seen federal pay and how much federal employees are paid. That issue get increasingly politicized, really. You've got some people on the conservative wing of the Republican Party who are inclined to support smaller government, who also feel that the numbers show that federal employees are vastly overpaid when compared to the private sector. Then you've got some people who say those estimates don't really hold water because in some cases they're not comparing like jobs to like jobs. They're not taking issues such as age, experience, and responsibilities into account. And some of them stand by the government's numbers that estimate that federal employees are paid roughly 24% below what their private sector counterparts make. And it's really kind of a ping-pong match that's been going on, and we're not really any closer to finding a solution. Part of it is because the government's estimates are so highly estimates upon estimates, that it's hard to point to any definite numbers and say this is what the comparisons are.
Well, yeah, it is such a strange thing, and we've been through this for years, comparing government salaries, and I always say that Uncle Sam doesn't do retail. You know,
mm-hmm.
You don't have any Walmart greeters working
right.
for the federal government. And it really is, it may sound like an elitist argument, but it's true. The government does different things. It's gone from, when I started on the beat, a large number of people were clerical employees, you know,
mm-hmm.
hundreds and thousands of clerks and stenographers and typists and whatnot. That's almost non-existent now. The workload shifted. A higher percentage of federal workers are college graduates than in almost any sector of the economy.
That's right.
The jobs, you know, NASA. I mean, look at places like that. Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Where do you find comparable things like that in the private sector? You do, but not many.
Right.
And so it is an apples and oranges thing, and people who were on the other side always moan and cluck their heads. But it seems to me this started out, this current round started maybe 18 months ago, maybe 2 years ago, with a piece in the USA Today that was based largely on statistics data from the Heritage Foundation, and it showed that government workers were overpaid. And I think they started out saying, I don't know if it was city by city, and then it changed to occupational, as you said, and then it said for even the same jobs they were overpaid, and then people come back with counter statistics that show it's not that way at all. Is this now? Is Director John Barry, OPM, is testifying today, and is it Colleen Kelly from the National Treasury Employees Union?
That's right. And one thing that I think is interesting is that I read through Director Barry's testimony, and even though he rejects the assertion that feds are vastly overpaid, overcompensated, he doesn't think that, but he does acknowledge that the way the government compares federal and private sector pay doesn't really reflect the complexity of the world we live in, is his phrase. One of the problems that he highlights is that when federal pay rates are changed, they're changed for everybody in a certain locality. So if you are an attorney in Los Angeles, your pay increases by the same amount that a Los Angeles IT specialist or a Border Patrol agent changes. It doesn't take into account other factors. You know, for instance, what if in Los Angeles there are, you know, there's a shortage of attorneys, but there's a glut of IT specialists? You'd expect the attorney's pay would need to go up to attract talented attorneys, and maybe we could bring the IT specialist pay down a little bit. The current system doesn't allow for those kinds of adjustments, and the classification system in the general schedule has been criticized by people like the Partnership for Public Service as being arbitrary, and there's getting to be, not in all parties, but getting to be a general consensus that even if federal employees are not overpaid or overcompensated, something needs to be done to make how the government compensates employees a little more market sensitive, a little more flexible.
Well, that's right. When they set up the pay comparability thing, you had government workers, they said the locality system, and feds in L.A. and Houston and Washington make more than people in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. But that's true, but a GS-11 in Kansas City is a GS-11, whether he's an attorney or one of these shortage category things, and that thereby is a problem. Folks, we need to take a short break here. If you can hold on, we'll be right back on 1500 AM talking with Steve Watkins, Steve Losey of the Federal Times, and they're breaking news today. We'll be right back.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Airink.
Iran says it wants more information from the U.S. on a former FBI agent who vanished in 2007. They're claiming they'll make an attempt to find him. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said last week that Washington had seen recent indications that Robert Levinson was being held in Southwest Asia and appealed to Iran to help find him. This despite past frustration that Tehran had ignored U.S. pleas and information about him. I'm J.J. Green.
When you think of forensics, a popular TV show with crime scene investigators probably comes to mind. But have you ever thought about forensics at the 30,000-foot level? Literally, AirInc has. AirInc and their partners help oversee the airspace above the nation's capital and have the ability to recreate virtually any situation to indisputably determine the facts, marrying everything from voice recordings to video to GPS. Log on to ARINC.com to learn more.
When the U.S. Army wanted to improve night vision technology, what trusted partner did it turn to? ITT Defense. ITT is developing next-generation technology that fuses traditional night vision with infrared imagery for unmatched vision for the warfighter. Through advanced information networks, data sharing, signal jamming, and other innovative technologies, ITT provides critical solutions to enable our troops to complete their missions and come home safely. ITT, doing essential things in extraordinary ways. Visit them at defense.itt.com.
Today, you're being asked to make every dollar count more, to do more with less and still less, and to continue to serve and protect. Yes, if you're in government, making tough choices just keeps getting tougher. Turn to Deloitte. We have the people, insight, and experience to help you afford more today, prepare for tomorrow, and help government help America. Insights and opportunities at Deloitte.com/federal.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Join me this week for my special guest, Peter Thiele, chairman of the Children's Charities Foundation. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax, Virginia. For more about the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient, clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free by calling 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes. You're going to be amazed by what you see, because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes and try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-600-0209. That number again is 1-800-600-0209.
Plan now to attend a firm's March 17th luncheon to hear a provocative and compelling talk on the state of cybercrime worldwide. Hear from the firm's special speaker from the FBI as he walks through the global world of crime online. That's March 17th at noon at the George Washington University Marvin Center in Washington, D.C. Register today at www.affirm.org. That's www.affirm.org.
Connect with Federal News Radio wherever you are. Like us on Facebook to see the hottest news stories on your wall. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/FedNewsRadio. Download our free iPhone app. Just go to the App Store and search for Federal News Radio. And now, connect to the radio station straight from your cell phone. Just call 712-432-6616. Go to federalnewsradio.com and search for social media for details.
Back to your turn, Mike Causey. Glad to have you with us. And we had a major news event broken here this morning. Steve Watkins and Steve Losey from the Federal Times, they had just left a meeting with Postmaster General Donahoe, and they reported to us and are reporting on their website that the Postal Service has announced it's going to eliminate, downsize 7,500 administrative, frontline supervisory, and postmaster jobs. And this is part of an overall downsizing of about 30,000 that will take place this year, and including some more post offices and postmasters, I'm sure. And that the there will be an early out, so we know that, but there is a possibility that there might be buyouts too. So that you guys are going to have that up on your website right away.
We should have it up momentarily,
even as we speak. Very good. Okay, but you know, back to these hearings, back to the Scopes monkey trial hearings today. Are federal workers overrated? Are the federal workers too tall? You know, this is, I guess, this would be a chance for Director Barry to possibly, you know, maybe test out on Congress or even unveil his plans, which have been in the works for about a year now, to literally overhaul the federal pay system and the pay and promotion and that kind of thing. You know, it's interesting what you were saying about the salary differentials in the cities, maybe the inability to adjust for market conditions.
Mm-hmm.
One of the complaints that the Clinton administration had, and people seem to forget that when President Clinton came into office, his first action was to propose a federal pay freeze. Now, he was overridden by Congress. But throughout his administration, for the 7 years that he proposed pay raises, he proposed raises that were not in line with those authorized and called for in the comparability law. And the reason was, he said, they were not including total compensation. They were not including the value of things like retirement, fringe benefits, vacations, and all of these things. And this seems to be a theme. And I wonder if this is going to be an issue today.
Well, yeah, you made an interesting point. You know, when the 1990 law, the FEPCA law, was passed, it told the government to pass pay increases that would bring this the pay gap down to, I believe, within 5%. And the government's never, ever done that. Not once have they proposed doing that. And there's people I've spoken to, experts say, that's a sign that not even the government really believes these, you know, 24-some-odd percent pay gap is real. If they really did think that federal employees were, you know, underpaid by a quarter, then they'd take some serious steps to whittle down that pay gap. But they've never actually done that. And some people think that that's a sign that, you know, nobody's buying this and something needs to be changed. You know, Max Steyer from the Partnership for Public Service is expected to testify that the question isn't whether the laws governing federal pay should be changed, but rather how should they be changed. And you mentioned John Barry's, you know, desire to overhaul the general schedule or replace it. That's true. He has said, you know, the general schedule is 6 decades old. It's outdated. It needs to be overhauled. But we haven't really seen a whole lot in terms of concrete steps to accomplish that. Barry's been spending a lot of his time on things like hiring reform and pay reform. Civil service reform seems to have taken a bit of a backseat to that. However, the new Republicans, particularly Dennis Ross, the chairman of the subcommittee, he is very interested in pay for performance, as is groups like the Heritage Foundation. Congressman Ross says he's interested in seeing pay for performance in the federal government, and if John Barry doesn't take steps to overhaul the general schedule, Congress may get out in front of him and kind of force these changes. It'll be interesting to see how this happens.
It really will. And at one point last year, Director Barry was talking about kind of eliminating grades as they were and mm-hmm. going with a three-step system of something like beginner, journeyman, and expert or something like that. And that frightened a lot of people. Listen, I'm looking at your front page, and you've got a number of interesting things here. And I printed this out before you broke the postal story. But you're talking about the TSA elections are going to start. The representation voting, I guess, starts Wednesday?
Yes, it starts today. Today, I believe this is how it's going to work. Today, the FLRA, the Labor Relations Authority, is mailing out packets to all roughly 43,000 screeners. That packet is going to have a PIN number for each screener to either log onto the internet and use that PIN number to vote or vote over the phone. So it's probably going to be a couple of days before the first votes get cast. But yeah, this process for what is going to be the biggest labor election in federal government history is the process begins today.
And, you know, I would think it's going to be one of the biggest in or out of government. You're talking about, 43,000 mm-hmm. TSA screeners here. And this, I don't think it's a make or break for either the American Federation of Government Employees or the National Treasury Employees Union. But whoever wins this one, is it going to be a winner-take-all thing?
Yeah, it's basically, the screeners have three choices. They can choose to be represented by the American Federation of Government Employees, the National Treasury Employees Union, or no union. They can opt to vote, say, we don't want to be represented by a union. So, yeah, it's going to be a winner-take-all. You know, one union is more than likely going to take the entire workforce.
And what this will mean is that the people are voting, and correct me if I'm wrong, people are voting to say we want no union or we want AFGE or we want NTEU to represent us. But that doesn't mean they're going to sign up and pay dues, does it?
No, not necessarily. When Director Pistol last month unveiled the collective bargaining rules, the rules for limited collective bargaining, I was talking to John Gage, and I said, and Mr. Gage, the president of AFGE, said that even if a screener is not a paid member of the union, he'll still be allowed to vote on any collective bargaining agreement the union strikes, which
President Gage said was very unusual in the labor realm. Usually you have to be a paid member to vote on these things.
You know, I'm looking at the what's going on around the states, and I guess Wisconsin is the state du jour, but you have the problems in New York and in California and in Florida and Tennessee. There's a problem with the teachers. Mm-hmm. Some people are trying to decertify them. And I think a lot of people don't understand that in some of the states, the unions, the state and local government unions, SEIU, whatever, have much more power than they do, than the unions have at the federal level. In some cases, they're actually bargaining over wages, which is something that, with a few exceptions, few places, that is not happening in the federal government, right?
That's right. That's
except,
right.
Well, except for the Postal Service.
Postal Service, right. And I guess FAA in some of these places. But it's, as a rule, federal employees do not bargain over wages, again, with the huge exception of the Postal Service. And that may be why they're kind of out of the line of fire in this, because the states seem to be places you wouldn't think of are really anxious to crack down on the unions.
That's right. Yeah. And it's interesting. I'm from Ohio, and Ohio's going through a terrific battle. One stage of the battle is done. The Ohio legislature has basically passed a bill, or is expected to pass a bill very soon, essentially stripping collective bargaining from public employees. And that, what's interesting about the Ohio case versus, say, Wisconsin, is that it includes firefighters and police. So that doesn't really help recruit public support, I think. But what we're likely to see, I believe, is in Ohio, I think the unions are going to redouble their efforts and put this on as a referendum on the ballot. So it's not exactly clear that that's the end of the story.
Well, you know, all the three of us have been looking at this for a long, long time, and the trend in the private sector has been that fewer people belong to unions every year, and that's a variety of reasons for that. Maybe a political thing, it may be philosophical, maybe the fact that the traditionally unionized jobs, manufacturing and whatnot, are being sent to elsewhere, so that the jobs aren't in Ohio anymore and aren't in Indiana and whatnot. But that said, it's starting to look as if there could be a day 5-10 years down the road when the vast majority of American workers are not unionized, and perhaps the vast majority of certainly state and local, but even federal workers might be unionized. I mean, that would be an interesting split, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a imbalance going on, as you point out. In the private sector, unionization has dropped considerably, and just the opposite in the public sector. And I think it is going to be increasingly difficult to maintain that imbalance, for the very reason that there's a resentment factor here, and that's you can see that in some of the articles that came out today in the newspapers. The Associated Press did a poll on this, and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but basically a significant portion of the American public is voicing increasing resentment that the public sector employees, who generally do belong to unions, have, in their minds, better pay and compensation packages. And what makes it, I think, particularly a problem for the public sector employees right now is, one, the deficit and the state of the economy, of course, really pronounces the resentment. But the fact that the American public is the taxpayer, so that, you know, in the private sector, employees who negotiate good pay and benefits, that comes out of the hide of the profit line.
That's
for
right.
The company. And in the public sector, that comes out of the taxpayers.
Totally different thing. Well, we do live in interesting times.